What's up, Noel Nation? Change is in the air, Michael, and we have all kinds of things to discuss on today's show. I know we're still in the midst of the 2024 season, but a lot of our focus has been turned to 2025 now. I mean, this season really has been left for dead for the most part. So now that we've got some new things to talk about, it actually kind of gets you a little bit excited for 2025, where things are going to be headed with this program. And that's really what we want to talk about today during the bye week, now that we don't have a game to talk about, thankfully, on Saturday. So we'll jump back into the regular programming next week. But now we got a lot to talk about. There's coaching changes in the air. Mike Norvell addressed the media on Monday about all this type of stuff. So we got some thoughts and takeaways from that. So a lot to get to today. We did go live when they made the announcements of the firings, but we kind of had a very condensed window to talk about things. So we wanted to come back to you guys and really kind of expand on that. Some of our thoughts on the changes, some of the names to know, to watch out for, of some possible candidates here, as well as some really common comments. That's a tough one to say right there. Some common comments among the fans base that we've seen since these changes have been announced. So a really exciting episode, Michael. You know, this kind of, we were talking about this before the show, like this season has been so dreadful. It really kind of reinvigorates you a little bit here. So excited to talk about this one, excited to jump in this episode. But before we do that, how are you, my friend? Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Jesse. I'm doing all right. You're right, man. I was a sludge most of this season. I mean, Georgia Tech game in Ireland, after that, I was kind of like, okay, maybe this is a one-off. And then it just started just by the time we got to Notre Dame, like I was emotionless. Sitting there watching, I was emotionless. I didn't even get upset because I'd become so numb to the disaster that is the 2024 FSU team. And then as soon as I got the alert on my phone, I immediately text you and I was like giddy again. I was trying to just consume everything I could consume. Yeah. Obviously, we went live pretty immediately to talk about it. And even after that, I've been diving into all these different coaches that are out there, names, possible recruits that they might, or possible players they might bring with them. So it's actually reinvigorated me, and I imagine you, and I imagine the fan base.
I agree, man. Like after that Notre Dame game, it's like your parents who always used to tell you, like, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. And I feel like that's really where it was after the Notre Dame game. Like, I'm not mad. We're 1-9. I can't get mad about losing anymore. I'll be mad next game if we lose to Charleston Southern. But at the same time, like, just disappointed. But this gives us some new things to focus on because it is exciting. I mean, you know, we're going to talk about a lot of things in this episode about why that is exciting, things that hopefully go right and what that can mean for the program. And I also want to start with the Norvell presser comments. But before we get into that, Michael, you know, the one thing that has not been disappointing this season, and that is today's sponsor, Alumni Hall FSU. You know, we've been rocking with these guys for a few years now. Look, their gear is always elite. And, you know, I don't know about you, Michael, but I still rock FSU stuff out in public.
That's right.
You just
have
to be like, I know.
We suck.
I know we suck. But guess what? My gear is looking fresh. So
that's
it ain't.
Right.
So make sure you go check these guys out. They got basketball gear, baseball gear, football gear. If you don't want to talk about football anymore, 1415 Timberlane Road in Tallahassee is their store location. Or you can shop online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page. They got point systems. They got a discount code using our promo code SPEAR to save 10%. So great place to shop. The ultimate Seminole shopping experience. Make sure you check those guys out. That's Alumni Hall. Thank you so much for supporting those that support us. So let's jump into this, Michael. I think the first place we should start is hearing from the horse's mouth itself. And that is Mike Norvell addressing the media this week. They asked a lot of questions about this stuff. And so I think that's the best place to start. Obviously, we know he's not going to, you know, really head on into a lot of these things. It's going to kind of be dancing around the points specifically. But I thought he gave us some pretty good insight into how this process is going to go. But I think more than just the comments, the first takeaway was, man, Mike Norvell just seemed different, right? Like we've seen him over the last few weeks and all his pressers really just downtrodden. I mean, like you would expect a coach that is 1-9 and feels like maybe he's, you know, he's treading water. And he just really has looked very lost at times in the pressers. He looked different now. He looked kind of like the old Mike Norvell back, like he had a little bit of a different attitude. Really, I think it's just the weight has been lifted off his shoulders. He seemed confident. He seemed concise. I mean, remember, he's a head coach. He's a very accomplished head coach. This is what he does. I think where a lot of that is, the Band-Aid has now been ripped off, right? And I think that changed a lot of his attitude because, you know, it's a man, it's tough. Like when you have to fire people that you've worked with for a long period of time. And I think people understand, and this is something that he touched on too, that he has a responsibility to those guys. Right. You know, you hired them. And so you asked them to trust you when you came to Florida State. And so when you do these types of things, when you have to fire somebody, you know, your families hang out together, your kids hang out together and things like that. So it's a tough decision. And I'm sure it's a decision that Mike Norvell has known about for some time. I'm sure probably very early to midway through the season, he knew he was going to have to make some changes.
Right.
And so I think now, knowing that those were going to be tough changes, now that they've already started to be made, I'm sure there's probably been conversations with some of the other coaches as well. Like, hey, look, you know, you're here to the end of the season, things like that. Everything's up in the air. I think it probably really does feel good to have that weight off of his shoulders.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. I thought Mike Norvell, you know, took a, if we were grading that press conference, I'd definitely give it an A-, you know.
Yeah.
I thought he had a great tone. He came in, you know, he again reminded the Florida State fan base that what happened at Notre Dame was unacceptable. Yep. They got beat in all three phases, poor coaching, poor execution, all of it. So he said, hey, look, I'm not forgetting about what happened at Notre Dame. It was terrible. But then I thought he took I thought his tone and posture around the coaching firings that he did, you know, it's Mike Norvell. That's what you want in a coach, a guy who cares about the people he hires. You know, as somebody who leads a organization myself, man, I care about every single person that works for me at our organization. And it's hard. It is really hard to have to sit in front of someone and say, like, you're no longer going to work here. I can't imagine, right, you know, him having to do that with guys he cares about. And not just guys he cares about, but their families. Their families have been tremendously involved in the program. And so I thought he took a great posture. He was somber, not too somber, but he was somber enough to say, yeah, this is hard. And then one of the things I love that he said, I still have an obligation to them. And what he meant by that was not about their contract, because they're obligated regardless. But he said, I had an obligation to them to get this right.
Right.
Because then those firings would have been in vain if he does not figure this out. And so I really appreciated that. But then the other thing I thought, so I thought he came with the appropriate amount of somber, but man, he was determined. You could see it. You haven't seen that determination on his face and in his demeanor, you know, for quite some time. He probably had it the first couple games, but just over and over getting beat, and the way they were getting beat, I think this firing, like you said, took a weight off his shoulder. Like, okay. All right, now let's get after it. Again, we don't believe here at Plant the Spear that this is it. We think there are potentially more firings coming. I know we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but I really just really appreciated his posture of somber, but then also determined to get this right. He said multiple times in that press conference, we will be back. We will be back quicker than what you believe.
Yeah, I really like that too. That was one of my biggest takeaways there, is that he knows this isn't up to the standard. And whether you're friends with those guys or not, like, your first obligation is to this program, the one that gave you a job. And I know it's hard when you have to fire someone coming off of a 13-1 season where, I mean, nobody thought they would be in this position, you know, and I know, like, we'll talk about this more in a minute, but talking about gauging interest, I mean, no one's job is guaranteed in this business, especially in coaching, because I mean, I guarantee you, if you asked Adam Fuller in January of last year, like, hey, do you think you're going to be fired at the end of this year? He would have given it a 0% chance.
Correct.
So, you know, I think he did handle it very well. And like you said, I really love the determination that he had, because again, this is what he does. He's been successful as a coach. This is more of an anomaly than anything else.
That's right.
Throughout his career. He also talked about how he has a plan in place and he knows what he wants it to look like. So I think I think that leads back that he's been planning this for some time. He said that he's open to giving up play calling duties if that's what's best for the program, and that he's very open-minded about this process. You know, whether that he was asked, do you feel like you need to bring someone in that basically runs your offense, or can it be a new scheme or something like that? And he's like, look, man, whatever's best for the program, whatever's best to help us get back, I'm open-minded about that. And so I think that's good to hear too, because I do think 1-9 has humbled him a little bit. Not that he was an arrogant guy, but you know, I think it's kind of like, look, I know I have to do what's best for this program or I'm not going to have a job.
Correct.
You know, and I think, like you said, the way he handled it, that helps other guys want to come work for you too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not treating those guys bad. Now, I do think one thing that is interesting that he mentioned that, again, this is goes back into the timing of things, is he did mention that the bye week does help because you don't have a game to get ready for. And, you know, we talked about that. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute in the common comments section, where a lot of people are like, oh, it's too late. And it's like, yeah, but, do you really want to go into a game like Notre Dame? Apparently it didn't help you to have the staff. But, like, did you really want to go into a game like that with a bunch of assistants analysts coaching? It was kind of a lose-lose. You can't go out and hire people anyway. Right. So I do think that, you know, the bye week, he can go out and start getting these feelers out, making these. Now, you know, again, he said they're going to respect other teams' processes. You know, if they have a conference championship game or the playoffs or something like that, they're not going to like ask these guys to just walk out on their program because that's right. not the type of guy that he is. But I think it's also where, like, you know, he knows that they have a chance to really start making these inroads now to see who's interested and who's not. He did say that he keeps a list of names in mind. That's something he's always done as a coach. So I'm pretty sure he probably knows, look, these are my first five guys to call. We'll see how those go. And then if we have to branch out farther than that, we will. He did say where there is plenty of interest, even from guys in the NFL. I think that's interesting to hear, too, because I know recruiting is a big part of this, so I want them to bring in recruiters, but I don't think it would be bad to have some NFL influence on this coaching staff. Now, I will say there have been some others that have been skeptical about this. You know, I typically don't drop a whole lot of names on this show of other outlets or anything like that, but Bud Elliott, a national columnist, is one. Apparently, I saw a clip where he said on the show that he doesn't think people are going to be overly interested in this job. I disagree with that because I think people will be. It's still Florida State. They still went 23-4 the last 2 years. And so I think, you know, something that Mike Norvell talked about is they do have the potential to bounce back really fast.
Yep.
And so, yes, he has to get it right. Yes, he is on the hot seat. Like his seat is warm. But this team did win the ACC last year. This was a playoff caliber team last year. It can bounce back fast. And if you come in here and you successfully help them bounce back, man, you are now a coach at a powerhouse program like Florida State. And so I think that's a huge resume boost for any coach who takes this job. But I'll kick it back to you on this, but that's kind of what I was hinting at earlier is, like, you know, people will say, okay, well, Mike Norvell, he's on the hot seat. He's probably going to get another year, maybe 2 years or something like that before maybe they make a decision on him or something. Man, that can go for any coach at any program. Like, you don't know who they might replace you with. You don't know how your next season's going to go. Again, Alex Atkins and Adam Fuller, they probably didn't think they were getting replaced coming off of that 2023 season. So I don't know that that's going to be a huge deterrent in this, because I think, again, them making these changes, as we talked about in that last episode, I think them making these changes tells you that this program is standing behind Mike Norvell. He is not going to be fired, I won't say anytime soon, but I don't think you bring in, I don't think you spend the money, make all these hires. And there was a comment from a recruit that we'll touch on in a minute that he was given the green light to go out and get the best. I don't think you're going to do that and then fire him next year. Now, if they go 1-11 next year, okay, sure, maybe.
Yeah.
But I do think this tells you that he's probably going to be around here for at least two more years. And I do think if you just get back to being like 8-4, 9-3, 10-2, something like that. Now, obviously, we want to be competing for the playoffs. That's probably going to extend that window for some time.
Yeah. Yeah, I would absolutely agree. Listen, I think working backwards to from your points, I think, you know, unless Mike Norvell wins less than, I'm going to say, 6-5 games.
I think bowl eligibility is a must next year.
Yeah. If he's not bowl eligible, then it depends on where he's at. Is it 5 wins, 6, 4 wins? If he's somewhere in there, you know, I think then, yeah, I think – I think he's definitely probably likely to get fired. If it's less than 4, he should definitely be fired. I mean, there's a lot who agree that he should be fired this year. I understand that. I mean, listen, we still got Charleston Southern. I'm not, I'm just saying, but I think what this indicates is he safely has at least 2 years, maybe even 3, if he can show steady improvement to get this back together. And, you know, to the storyline out there about Bud Elliott, I've seen some of that as well, too, that you don't think any top. Listen, first of all, And I know it's hard to say this when we're staring at, you know, 1-9 and potentially 1-11 or 2-10 or maybe 3-9. But Florida State is still an iconic brand. How many primetime games have we had this season? So many to watch Florida State get embarrassed in primetime. So much fun, let me tell you. But there's still primetime. It's still Florida State. Florida State will always be Florida State. Miami and Florida will always be those sleeping giants of a program because you are in the hotbed of talent. If you can be a competent coach and you can recruit well, you can make Florida State, Florida, and Miami a national championship contender like that, right? Yep. And so there are coaches who may not be at those super power four programs, or they may not be in the position at those power four programs that will look at a Florida State and say, yeah, that's my opportunity. And they will take it. So it's kind of like that, you know, talking point out there about, oh, I don't think all this, it's kind of like, Jesse, you go by, you know, I don't know, you go hang out with like your girl and you like, you know, you like her a lot. And then she friend zones you. What do you say? Well, I didn't like her anyways. I never was into her anyways. Yeah. Right. That's what it is. And this is not that. There are many coaches. I don't think Mike Norvell is a liar. So when I heard him in his press conference say that there has been tremendous amount of interest already because he has a list and he has put out those feelers, I believe him. Now, we're not going to go get a Nick Saban to run our defense. No, that would be amazing. No. Okay. Yeah. So let's just get that out of our heads. We're not going to go get Lincoln Riley to run our offense. Okay. But we're going to go get competent coaches who will come in and help Mike Norvell get this program back to elite status.
Yeah. And I do think at the same time, you got to look at like the money too. Like, right. I know that is a motivating factor, but Florida State is willing to pay. And if they apparently have the green light to go get good staff members, that's going to be a significant upgrade for what some of these coaches are getting. I mean, you already look at, they were paying Adam Fuller almost unreal coordinator money. I mean, he was making $2 million a year. That's top five, top 10.
That's right.
For coordinator money right there for a guy.
Get a really good one.
Exactly. For a guy who, I mean, he did put together a couple of top defenses before he got that raise, but I mean, that's really good money for a coordinator. So I do think there will be interest in this, but I understand what he's saying. I do get to where if things don't go well, Mike Norvell could get canned, but I think you also have to talk about money. I mean, I don't think Florida State really is in a position where they want to fire Mike Norvell. Yeah. I think they would rather stick it out with him if possible at all costs to be able to have to not pay that $64 million or $46 million or whatever it is in a couple of years. But that's something that I've said for a long time. I've said, I think he gets 2 more years. I think you make the changes and then you give them 2 years to bake. Like, you know, you don't put the cookies in the oven and then pull them out 5 minutes later and expect them to be done. Like, you have to give it time to be able to kind of do that. But, you know, the last thing I want to talk about there with some of the comments that he made, I did have down here, which you already brought up, that he did acknowledge, man, this is not good enough. And so results matter. And that is something that I was very happy to hear him acknowledge that matters. He did say that he has already talked to recruits. Probably you only got, 13 of them
13
now.
13 of them.
So you probably already talked. That probably took 5 minutes to call. He just group text all 13 of them. You didn't have to wait for nights and weekends, man. You remember when that used to be a thing? Like, you didn't have to use all your minutes.
That's right.
Because you only got 13 of them. Exactly. But I did see where he did talk to the recruits. Some of the recruit comments. Really, the one that you want to know about more than anything is Solomon Thomas. That's because
he's your bell cow right now.
Right. He is the highest rated lineman you've signed in probably decades, as far as offensive line go. That's a position of need where you need to get a guy like this. And you just fired his position coach. So that was somewhere you were worried. Now, you saw a couple of the Mario Nash Jr. I think he made a comment too. You pretty much saw a lot of the same themes amongst these recruits, right? Where it was kind of like, I don't like it because they had bonded with him, but you know, they've always said, and I know everybody's different here. I wasn't recruited as a, you know, a college football player, but you always hear people talk about commit to the school, not to the coach, because you never know what's going to happen. That coach could leave on his own accord, let alone get fired. And so I do think that they are disappointed that you got rid of their position coach, but then every one of them pretty much followed up with, look, it's a business and they want to win. And so I understand that the product on the field wasn't good enough. You know, even Solomon Thomas, I read some comments that he made earlier, was that he is still in contact with other programs, but he's not like really looking to flip to another program. He says he trusts Mike Norvell. He trusts the process. He thinks he's going to go out and get somebody good to help him get, you know, achieve his dream of going to the NFL. And so he's really just kind of waiting to see who they get as an offensive line coach to really know what he wants to do. And that's the thing, man. There's so many, like when you look at these recruits, so many people will be like, oh, we're going to lose this guy because we did this. Or, oh, man, you could bring in somebody the next week or, you know, in 3 weeks when the season is over. And you could have recruits knocking on your door to get in this program because they want to play for that guy. So I like the approach that Solomon has taken by being like, look, I'm not going to overreact to this. And I think that's where Mario Nash, I saw his comments too, was kind of like, you messed up by firing my guy, but at the same time, understands the business.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like, I think a lot of them are taking that approach where it's like, look, I liked Alex Atkins. I'm going to miss that he's not my coach.
Yeah.
But let me see how this plays out. Yeah. You may go out and get somebody who's great, and I still want to be a part of that. So they seem to trust Mike Norvell throughout this process more than anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, here's the thing I'll just throw out to Florida State fans, Jesse, is this. If I were you, because we were dealing with 16 to 18-year-old kids, okay?
Yep.
I would go ahead and just pencil them off. Because here's why. If they stay, Merry Christmas. If they don't, you're not angry. But we've seen this happen before. We saw this happen with Jimbo Fisher. When Jimbo Fisher left, right, a bunch of recruits were like, well, we'll see who they get and blah, blah, blah. And then as soon as they got Willie Taggart, a bunch of recruits jumped off and Florida State fan base almost ran off a bridge, right? Then Willie Taggart, right? And when they fired Willie Taggart, well, we'll see who you got. Then they brought Michael on and a bunch of recruits jumped off, okay? Yep. Look, I'm just telling you, I would love for us to keep these 13 and go get some more. But the likelihood that we're going to keep all 13, if any of them, is very small in this day and age. Okay. So let's tell ourselves right now, they're probably going to decommit and go somewhere else. And that's okay, because we need players who are bought in to the mission of getting Florida State back to where it needs to be. Now, if they stay, that's awesome. If they don't, man, that's too bad for them.
Right. And you can understand because they did commit.
Right.
You know, we talked about commit to the school, not the coach, but they still commit to the coach. I mean, it makes a big difference. And so I do think that you're right about that. You want to keep every single one of them and then add some more, but you can't. I mean, these kids aren't loyal anyways. But, you know, even when you were 13-1, like, you could be losing commitment. So I think it is what it is. And, you know, these kids aren't dumb. They got to know when it's when you're 1-9 that this is a possibility.
Correct.
And then the last thing I want to touch on here, which will lead us right into the next segment of the show, is he did talk about Randy being the interim DC, says he wants him to put his stamp on it because he has, you know, experience as a DC there, which he's pretty much the only one left on staff that has that experience. So he will be calling the defense going forward. But he did say that while there will be some differences from what you've seen in the first 10 games, they're 10 games in. And so it's pretty much you're not going to be installing new packages based on, you know, two more games left, but you do have a bye week. You do have Charleston Southern, which you should win that game. So you can put in a couple of different wrinkles of some things that make Randy kind of do his own thing there, which brings me to the next part of the show, the addressing common comments. And that is Randy Shannon. This is probably Michael. I think, I don't know that when I posted the thing, I think it got like 200 and something comments or whatever. I'd say probably 60% of them are about Randy Shannon and still being on the staff. And look, guys, here's the thing. I've seen so many talking about this isn't going to help 2024 and all this type of stuff. Look, these changes were not made to try, oh gosh, I think we could beat Charleston Southern if we just fire these guys. Like, that's not the point of these are forward-looking changes. These are to try and steer this program back on the road in 2025. These have nothing to do with 2024.
All right.
So, I mean, other than the performance in 2024. And the thing is, though, you still have two games left. And so somebody has to be on the sideline calling the plays. And so when you look at Randy being retained as the interim DC, he's the only one on staff with DC experience. So someone had to stay around to you know, call the plays for the last two games. I would be highly I really don't expect him. I would be very surprised if Randy is retained after the end of the season. We've talked about this ad nauseum where I think this is, you know, you mentioned it earlier. This is just the beginning of things here. You know, I think you start with the coordinators so you can really kind of start figuring this out because, you know, let's just say there's a rumor that Mike Norvell has been telling recruits that they already know who the replacements are. I don't believe that. It's only been what, a 2 days. I think that's a little crazy, but let's just say 2 weeks from now, you know who it's going to be. You already know who your coordinator is going to be. Those coordinators, chances are, I mean, obviously everything's going to run through Mike Norvell, but they're going to have some input in who they want to bring as far as their position coaches go. So I think it's easier to start with the coordinators. Now, I will admit, I thought Adam Fuller was a little bit of a surprise that he got fired, but I think if you're going to start over, let's just start all the way over. And I think right. That's the way Mike Norvell looks at it. So I think that it's not too little too late. And when people say there's not enough firings, there's more coming. But I think you start with those coordinators so that if you do get a yes, and this guy can start thinking, all right, well, who do I want to go get? Right. So they can start getting their staff in place as well. And so, yeah, man, I the last thing I want to say, and I'll kick it back to you about the whole in-season changes and all that stuff, is in-season changes typically don't make a lot of sense. We are not Alabama. We are not Georgia. We can't be like, oh, gosh, well, you know, look at Georgia. We got Will Muschamp over here as a defensive analyst. Guess what? You're the DC now. Like,
exactly.
We would like to have him as our DC, period. And so we don't have that luxury. So right now, in-season firings don't make a lot of sense. You can't go out and hire anybody brand new already. They're not going to come in and just install some new scheme for the last six games of the season if you had fired them after Duke or whatever it is. So in-season firings don't make a lot of sense. I think this was a good time to do it, going into a bye week with Charleston Southern on the other side of it. All the important games, not that it mattered because you lost all of them, mm-hmm. are out of the way. People are mad that there's not enough firings. It's coming, guys. It is coming. Just give it time. Let the season play out. And then once it's over, you will see a lot more changes happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, again, the idea of this was to send a statement. Now, I know there are people out there who are saying, well, he could have sent a statement after Clemson or after SMU or after UNC. You're right. He could have done that. But in Mike Norvell's mind, he wanted to get to this last bye week because there's only two games. And for him, it just made sense. He's the head coach. He's paid $10 million to figure this all out. So to him, he wanted to wait until this time. But also to him, it made sense to do it now. And again, to do it with the biggest names possible. We talked about this in our live episode where we went live right when the firings were announced. But you said you were surprised. I wasn't surprised that Adam Fuller's name went in, because you're talking about the three, I mentioned this on that episode, the three biggest frustrations of this season: offensive line, defense, and wide receivers, right? So offensive line has been atrocious. They've stepped back. They've regressed. So, yes, Allie Atkins, not about the OC, because Mike would have to fire himself as the OC.
Right.
But it was about the offensive line. They have not gotten better. We've got 8 billion offensive linemen in this program, and none of them are worthy enough to start on Saturday. Then you talk about the defense as a whole. Like, listen, yes, he orchestrated, you know, some top 10 defenses in his time here. Yes, he's done that. But on the other side of it, that defense has been atrocious for 3 of the 5 years that he's been here, especially this year. And I got into a Twitter discussion with a bunch of people because they were like, you know, why Adam Fuller didn't deserve to be fired. Are you kidding me? They were saying it's the offense's fault. Well, Jesse, did the offense, like, is the offense allowing all this points? Is the offense 99th in the country? Is the offense the worst third down defense in the country? No, the offense didn't do that. Yes, the offense might have put the defense in some bad positions, but it's still on the defense to rise up. That's Adam Fuller. So those, and then you talk about wide receivers. Don't even get me started.
You don't even have to name those.
We drop all the balls, every ball, even practice balls, balls that we're throwing as we're walking to class, they're dropping. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. So yes, the three biggest frustrations that the fan base has, of course, if I'm the head coach, if I was Mike Norvell, I'd be like, what are the three biggest frustrations this fan base has that I was already thinking about firing? Bam, there you go. Because that sends a message to the rest of the staff that, hey, I'm serious. Now, yes, as you said, as we get to the end of the season, somebody's got to call the defense. Randy Shannon has been a defensive coordinator before. So, yeah, he's going to allow Randy Shannon to call, and he's going to let him put his little wrinkle on. I don't have a lot of money, but I bet the $5 I got in my bank account right now, he ain't going to be back next year. I just would bet. And if he is, Lord have mercy on Mike, because he is signing his pink slip right there. But I imagine he won't be back. I imagine there'll be more people that will be a part of this as well, too. And then, of course, as again, like you said, the coordinators, whoever he hires, they're going to have a lot of say. You know, Mike will have the insight, but they'll have a lot of say who those position coaches will be under them. So the rest of the coaching staff should not feel safe at all.
Right. I would give it probably a 1% chance that there's less than three or four more coaches fired. Like, I think Surtain is probably safe on the defensive side for the most part.
Yeah.
Although there's a lot of rumblings that he's not going to be here anyway for his own accord. Like, maybe he takes that Southern Miss job or something like that. I think Yak is probably the only one that's safe on the offensive side there because he has recruited well. The backs have been pretty good. You know, again, man, and this is a topic we don't have time to get into. I do differ a little bit on the defense here. I just think that the only reason I say that is because I think the defense gets left out on the field a lot. Like, they're 30, 35 minutes on the field. And I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I would really like to almost look at, like, what the first half defensive stats look like versus the second half, because we don't have the depth that we had last year. And so I think you leave them, you know, they just get left out on the field so long. I mean, you look at the Notre Dame game. Besides that very last little touchdown there, they had Notre Dame 14-3 or whatever it was going into halftime. And then it just explodes in the second half. It's always the same thing over and over and over, where it's like they play good in the first half, and then they get gassed, and then they give up a lot of points in the second half because the offense is so terrible. But again, like you said, third down defense is a problem. It's been a problem here for a while. He had a great defense. They were a couple of top 20 defenses there when you had a roster full of NFL talent, but you're not going to have that every year. And you really weren't recruiting at a high enough level to go out and get that talent to begin with. So I think, you know, you have to look from the top down. And, you know, again, like, you got to go out and get guys who can recruit, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. But, yeah, man, I think that these were just the initial batch of changes that needed to be made, because it's going to be a trickle-down thing. You kind of – you cut the head off the snake first, and then you figure the rest out. But, you know, speaking of the changes, man, we touched on this a little bit in the opening of the show. Like, this has me excited again, man. This is like, this has got me excited for the upcoming season, because I still believe in Mike Norvell. We talked about this in the episode, should FSU fire Mike Norvell? It was two episodes ago. And we both agreed that we don't think they should fire Mike Norvell, pending they don't lose to Charleston Southern. Then we might have a different conversation, but I don't think they should. I still believe in this guy because, you know, again, man, like, everyone talks about they should fire him, you know, for one reason or another. And I'll comment on that in a second. But, like, that old staff that you had was always kind of like, it wasn't, you know, I mean, no offense to Alex Atkins. He, you know, he recruited well. He didn't develop very well, but he came from Charlotte. You know, you look at Adam Fuller, like, I know he was with Mike Norvell at Memphis. It wasn't his first choice. It wasn't even his second choice. You know, he wanted Dan Lanning at the time. And so it was kind of like, who is Adam Fuller? You know, Ron Dugans wasn't really good at Miami either. So you're like, they changed a couple other positions too, from guys that weren't really that great at the time of the position. So that kind of, it's not great staff. They did overproduce because they were able to capitalize on some really good, talented players. This new invigoration makes me think, like, man, if they could do that with that staff, what if Mike Norvell hits home runs in the offseason? Now, that's not saying it's going to happen, but what if he goes out and builds a real championship level staff, man? This thing could, like he talked about, you could get rolling back really, really fast with this thing. So these new changes have me really excited for the future of Florida State. Again, there's no guarantee that it's going to happen, but I am excited about it, man.
No, absolutely. I totally agree with you. Jesse, do you remember your first car? What was your first car?
Man, it was a 1991 Chevrolet Silverado. I had some paint, some rims on it, like I was flexing, but I also drove that thing. I gave that thing hell, boy. That thing was, that had a rough life.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I like it. My first car was a 1985 Camry, Toyota Camry box, you know, the box version. It didn't have a back window. I had a trash bag back there. I had to carry a 5-gallon water tank in because I didn't, my radiator was busted, so I had to put water every hour on the hour. But that car, man, I'll never forget that car. I love that car. I treated that car like it was part of my family. It took me places I never thought I could go. But at some point, Jesse, you and I, we had to change cars because for us to get to the next stage of life, we had to get a better car, right?
Yeah.
Well, this is the same. Mike Norvell came in with an 85 box Camry with no back windows, a broken radiator. But you know what? That car took him to 13-0, right? Took him to 19 straight, took him to 23-4. Man, I mean, we had some incredible memories with that car. Yeah. But then I think he kept that car 1 year too long. And I told you this in the pre-show. I thought he should have made changes on the staff. I mean, think about this, guys. Think about this. We talked about this on the pre-show. In the 5 years that it's been here, Mike has only made changes. Like, and by changes, I mean, like, gently nudged two coaches, Chris Marv, linebacker coach, went to Virginia Tech, and Marcus Woodson, who went to Arkansas. Now, yes, Kenny Dillingham did leave, but Kenny left on as a promotion, basically, right, to Oregon, right, and then took over Arizona State. So maybe three, if you want to count it, but three.
Right. And he didn't even hire an OC back. He just promoted within.
He just promoted one within. That's it. In 5 years, right? And it was great. He loved those guys. Man, Mike is, I mean, if you saw that game day piece they did on Dan Lanning, man, it just tugs your heartstring. That's awesome. But I thought in 2022, you were already starting to see signs that maybe this is not the coaching staff to keep you on top with all the recruiting misses, with some of the stuff that was going on, with the regression we were starting to see in the players. And then we kept them. We gave them a raise. Mike Norvell deserved his raise. Like, I hate the arguments out there about, well, we shouldn't have gave. No, the man had just taken us a 13-1. Like, calm down. He deserved that raise.
Right.
Adam Fuller and all those other guys did not. There was no reason to give them that raise. And so they kept the staff 1 year too many. It's time for Mike to get a new car that's going to take him to the next level of elite coaching and keep us there. That's what this is about.
Yeah, and I mean, it's pretty rare to only see in 5 years only two coaches really replaced. And when I say you promote from within, he didn't even really promote. He just kind of gave him an extra tab on his resume there. I mean, it's, you know, it's almost like, remember that old thing they used to have, the cash for clunkers?
Yeah.
Like, we're just giving some cash to get rid of our clunkers. And so now it's time to upgrade and get some new cars. And so, like, I don't mean to call the guys clunkers, you know, realistically, but that's kind of what it feels like right now. So we, you know,
we should title this episode Cash for Clunkers.
Cash for Clunkers. And so, like, it's time for an upgrade. You know what I mean? It is. You blew a head gasket on the Camry, and now it's time to go out and get a Lexus. Right. So it does have me excited, though. I mean, it does to think of the possibilities of what could happen. Yeah. But I think that leads into the next thing that I was going to say is that you got to get a staff in here that can recruit and then develop the talent, because, you know, you touched on it. It's like, regardless of what happened on the field, the recruiting issues were always there. You still never signed a top 10 class, even coming off a 10-win season, a 13-win season. You never did that. And the problem with the current staff, or, you know, what's left of it, is they could never stock the roster with the talent necessary. And they also weren't great developers, too. You know, if you can recruit like Georgia or Clemson, even, you know, Clemson, there's been a lot. I think Clemson's a great example. Like, I know they're not the Clemson of old. They're not winning national titles and things like that. But there have been a lot of things with Clemson where, like, Dabo got some heat where they were like, oh, man, he's hiring his friends. And, you know, with Brandon Streeter and then some of the other things like that. And a lot of people were like, man, he's got to stop hiring these coaches from within promotions. You got to go out. And that's why they got Garrett Riley. They went out and they realized that he had made a mistake and they went and did the stuff. But the thing is, when Clemson has a down season, it's still a 9 or 10 win season.
Yeah, exactly. Right,
because they have dudes on that roster. They have five-star talent all across that roster. And so it's like, if you have an average developer, but you're starting with a bunch of 4 and 5-star recruits, I mean, you can kind of back your way into having some really good players. But you can have great developers, but if they can't recruit, there's only 3 stars with heart are only going to get you so far. And I know people love to have guys who are committed to the program and all that type of stuff. That's great. Man, Georgia ain't taking a lot of 3 stars.
Thank you.
So, like, you got to have guys that can go out and get dudes, and then they have to be able to at least remotely develop them too. So, I mean, it's still, you know, there's always that age old conversation, the X's and O's versus the Jimmys and the Joes, man. It's still like, I can be the most technique sound boxer in the entire world. If I get in the ring with Mike Tyson, I'm sleeping in 10 seconds. I am drooling on the mat within 10 seconds, guaranteed. So I think that is what is exciting, is if they can hit a home run on these offseason hires, this thing can be flipped around fast and they can turn this thing into a real machine again. Because again, we were 19 straight in an ACC title just a couple of months ago, you know, less than a year ago. That's where they were at. And the last thing I do want to talk about with Mike Norvell and him being fired is, you want to get out from under this as cheap as possible. You want to get back to prominence as cheap as possible, because, you know, you also have to think about with the buyouts. I mean, that could Florida State pay the $64 million buyout? I'm sure they could. If they really, truly wanted to, they could tap private equity, whatever the case may be. They could probably go find the money. But you don't really want to do that, man, because one, like, what if this house settlement thing drops and now all of a sudden you're having to pay $20, $30 million a year for your roster. You know, the same boosters that are going to contribute to Mike Norvell's buyout, because a lot of that is booster-led, the same ones that are going to contribute to Mike Norvell's buyout are also the ones that can contribute to the Battle's End.
Right.
So what would you rather have? Buy Mike Norvell out for $64 million, or, you know, it's what we say, $9 to $10 million a year, or right, would you be better off going out and getting new assistants and putting that $9 to $10 million into your NIL collective and giving him the talent that, oh, by the way, we just saw them win 19 straight games in an ACC right, championship with. So if the talent is there, because again, man, I mean, think about this. Everyone wanted Mike Norvell fired, but when you talk about firing Mike Norvell, right, it's kind of like, what if the next guy comes in and doesn't do well? You know, Nebraska had a home run with Scott Frost and all the things he did at UCF and all these other programs that you saw, but it didn't work out. And so, like, there's a lot of good coaches. Look at Dave Dorn at NC State. He's a dang solid coach. Not great, but solid.
Right. Yeah.
They've never won 10 games. And so Mike Norvell has done something that a lot of really good coaches have never been able to do, and that's go out and win a conference title, win 19 games in a row and all that. So I think if you're able to give him quality assistance, now he was responsible for not firing those guys. That's on him too.
Right.
But if you're able to do that, put that money into the roster, because, I mean, think about this 2024 roster. Michael, who scares you on this roster? Who is an NFL? Who can you point to besides Azaria Thomas? Maybe. I think he will be an NFL bound corner eventually, maybe even this year, and Josh Farmer. Other than that, you really don't have any just straight dudes like last year, right, where you could point to all these guys. So I think you keep Mike Norvell, you put the money into getting the best assistants that money can buy, and then you put the rest of the money that you're saving from the buyout into the roster, because, again, with talent, you've seen them achieve success at the highest level.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Listen, you don't want to become a program that is just churning out coaches every so often. You brought up Nebraska. Let me give you a perfect, I know we use Nebraska as this example, but it is such a case study. You know, we could use Miami too, but, you know, they've had better seasons than Nebraska has, even though they haven't won anything in 20 years and lost to Georgia Tech twice. We'll get to that later. Yeah. But like you look at Nebraska, who was a powerhouse in the late 80s and 90s with Florida State. And as soon as Tom Osborne left, they started churning coaches like you churn your underwear. I mean, Frank Solich, Bill Callahan, Bo Pelini, Barney Cotton, Mike Riley, Scott Frost, Mickey Joseph, and now Matt Rhule. I mean, just over and over again. Yes, they're not in a talent-rich state. Yes, it's hard to recruit there. But, man, they sell out every single game. They have more money than they know what to do with in those cornfields. They should still be an elite program. But the problem is that they've churned out. They've not been happy. They've not been satisfied with their coaches. And they've just gone on that. This Florida State cannot become that. We just can't. And so, yes, this is unacceptable. Mike has said that. This is unacceptable. This is not the standard. This is not Florida State football. Absolutely. You got to give him a chance to turn it around. When he came in, he inherited a dumpster fire and built it up to 13-0. We've seen the proof. Florida State fans, we've seen the proof in the pudding. Now let's see if he can clean up his own mess. And if he can't, if you give him a year or two and he can't do it, okay, all right. Take the loss, fire him, let's go get a better coach. But we got to give him a chance to do that, because I think it's imperative that we do not become a Nebraska.
Right, and you just have too many irons in the fire right now, I think, with everything going on, suing the ACC, building your football-only facility. Like, even if this thing doesn't work out the way you want and you get back to, like, 8-4, 8-4, 8-4, and you're like, look, this ain't good enough. 4 years, 3 years from now, you rip the Band-Aid off, you clean house. Well, then you've got all these things that are done and already in place, so it looks way more attractive for the next guy to come in. But, yeah, I think that's just something I want to touch on with Mike Norvell. But, you know, now let's transition into, like, the exciting part of the show. This is what everybody's waiting to hear. Like, who are we gonna get? And I'll first say that, like, we don't know. Mike, I like barbecue, but I ain't got no sauces. You know what I mean? Like, I got sauces, I ain't got sources. So, like, we're just putting our ear to the ground. We're gonna talk about some guys that, you know, we're hearing mentioned through the grapevine, some of the things that are being reported, some of the guys that we like. But before we jump into that, you know, I do want to just kind of do a little, like, overarching thoughts on this whole thing here. And I will first say that, like, coaching hot boards, Michael, are like writing a letter to the college football Santa Claus. You know, it's almost Christmas time coming up. Like, we're going to say who we like, but only our parents know what we're actually getting for Christmas.
Exactly.
You know, we're going to say who we want as coaches. Only Mike Norvell knows. And you're going to have lot of fake insiders. You know, a lot of people who are going to come out. I already know. Oh, this is who we're going to get. We're all just guessing. But there are some names that are probably most likely. We'll all find out in due time. But it is fun to talk about. So we're going to give some lists of some names we know. But again, I do want to touch on this before we get into the names that we're talking about here. I think the really important thing to keep in mind as we go through this process is this is why I think you're going to see it maybe not play out really fast. I mean, you want to see it get done as fast as possible, but Mike Norvell really, really needs to get this right because this is probably the last chance he's going to get if things go poorly. You know, if in 2020, by the end of 2026, if they're 6-6 repeatedly, you're not going to get another chance to go out and change coordinators and change coaches and things like that, outside of obviously somebody like getting promoted or something like that. This is probably his only shot. And so he knows that he has to get this right. So I would not rush into this. Plus, like I touched on earlier, he's also going to respect the process of some coaches that might be in conference championship games or the CFP. There's some names that we're going to talk about that are involved in that.
Yep.
I think as far as, you know, something that I will touch on that's kind of – it's a two-edged sword. I kind of have to talk out of both sides of my mouth on this. But you want to do it before early – you'd like to have it – let me rephrase that. You'd like to have it by early signing day so you know – recruits know what they're going to get. But, man, the 2025 class really kind of – it is what it is. Like, either these guys are rocking with you or they're not. I mean, you're already 1-9. They pretty much know they're going to get some new coaches. I'm sure Mike Norvell will give them a tip of that they have somebody, you know, after – and a lot of this can happen. Like, you'll see coaches that might be in conference championship games, and how many times do you see them in the CFP where they're like, look, I'm now going to be coaching for this school. They'll either stick around or they won't. And so you, but you'll know what team they're going to. So you may know the hire. He just may not be on your staff quite yet. But that 2025 class pretty much is what it is. And I will say, as far as recruiting goes, you do have to remember that you would like to flip some guys from these programs that they're bringing in. But, man, in the transfer portal era, like, as long as you don't have an NIL deal that you can't get out of or something like that, that's going to be your most complicated part of this whole process. You can pretty much get a guy like, I mean, he could sign a letter of intent with whatever school he's going to. Then his coach gets announced that he's going to Florida State. And he's like, all right, guess what? I'm entering the portal and I'm going to transfer. Correct. Like, that is part of it too, as far as that goes. But I think really overall, your focus for 2025 right now, the end of this process, or as this process gets going, the end of 2024 season, going into the offseason, you really need to focus on making the best hires possible. You need to focus on a good portal haul, focusing on the line of scrimmage, because that's where you're in trouble the most. You need to focus on roster retention for those that you actually want to keep. Mm-hmm. Wink, wink. There's a few guys I think you're going to let walk. Some of those guys that held you over the coals for money that aren't playing up to snuff. I think you can. Look, you're going to take a pay cut or you're going to walk either way. And then developing the guys on your roster. I think that is really the most important things. And then the last thing is really rebuilding the culture. You need to come in and have guys focused on putting in the work, not having guys loafing, not having guys with that individualistic mentality like we're seeing this year. You need to develop leaders. Those are your main focuses this year, not that 2025 class. You knew you were going to take a beating on this class regardless. It's going to be small, 10 to probably 15 recruits tops. So you get what you can. You leave what you don't, you know, what you end up losing. It is, like you said, it is what it is, man. You take what you can get, but it is what it is. So I don't think you, like, rush the process over recruiting, because you're looking for, this is 25, 28, 30. These are the long-term changes that you're hoping last with this program. I will say that early signing day is different this year. It did change. The date is December 4th through the 6th, so that's coming up relatively fast, and the first portal opening period runs December 9th through the 28th. So I think you would like to have these changes in place probably, or at least announced by December the 9th, so you can start working in the portal there as well. But yeah, man, and then the last thing I'll say, I'll kick it to you for some of these thoughts, is that I think you want proven guys if you can get them. You want guys who have, because you know you have to get it right, like I talked about. This is your one chance. So you want proven guys at these coordinator positions. You want guys with experience, at least as a OCDC. We're going to focus more on that than the position coaches, because there's some things
there. There's so many out there,
So you want proven guys that have at least been co-coordinators or coordinators that have called a defense before. I think you would prefer them maybe to even come from the Norvell tree, because then he knows these guys. He knows what they're about. They know what he's about. I would target younger guys who can recruit, who can relate to recruits, who have longevity on the staff. And, you know, you again, you don't want to really take a lot of risk here, because not only do you have to get it right, you got to get it right fast, because yep. you can't, you know, mess around and have a couple of bad years or you all might be gone. And then the last thing I will say is that, like, there will be off the field changes too. Like, we're going to talk about the coordinators today, but there's going to be off the field changes too. Like, Derek Ray probably may or may not be retained. You know, a lot of these guys, some of those guys may or may not be retained too. So there's going to be so many changes, but a lot of that won't happen until you get your coordinators in place, because, like we said, they're going to be influential in who you go hire at those other positions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, just got a lot to cover there. So I think the biggest thing I think about too is that with this recruiting class, you know, with the high school signing day being December 4th through the 6th, I think your high school class for this year is going to be what it is.
Yep.
Yes, whoever you hire might be able to bring one or two recruits over with them, but you pretty much, whatever it is, it's going to be what it is now, because it's hard to, one, maintain a semblance of a class at 1-9. Two, you fired the coaches that they, you know, committed to. And then three, you're bringing in new coaches that they now have to try to establish relationships with that they haven't had relationships. So your high school recruiting class is going to be what it is. I don't think Florida State fans should rake Mike Norvell and the new coaching staff over what the high school class is going to be. Now, you can rake Mike Norvell over the fact that we're in this position, right? The high school recruiting class sucks, but whatever it's going to be, we really can't blame him after that, because it is what it is, as I always say, right? It is what it is in that same sense. I think, again, like you said, Jesse, this is going to have to be a heavy portal class. And I think whoever you hire, part of your interview with them needs to be, okay, if I hired you, who are you bringing with you? I mean, yeah. It has to be that. Currently, right now, who on your team do you think you could get into the portal and here at Florida State? But they have to be good. Like you risk your career on this player. Who it is. I think that's a part of your interview process as well. And I agree that you're right. I know you're going to want to have those high school recruits, their coaches figured out for them. But because I think this is going to be a heavy recruiting transfer portal class, I think it's important that the culture goes first. I think you've got to deal with this culture. Yep. I think you got to figure out how to make sure that you get the right coaching staff in that play. Because here's the thing. Unlike other teams, and this was a problem, if you were to do an expose on where this all went wrong, one of the things we talked about this was the fact that they just got snubbed. They were supposed to go recruiting, so they kind of tried to go recruiting, but also try to like deal with the emotional
the fallout
from the snub as well, and it just created a catastrophic problem. Also, while trying to get ready for the Orange Bowl, well, guess what? You ain't got no bowl to worry about. Your butt can be right in the recruiting and the transfer portal. You're gonna have access to all the top transfers well before all these other big schools who are in the bowls will have, because there'll be a lot of players who opt out of playing the bowls to get into the transfer portal, so they get a head start on getting spots. Now, yes, you're also going to have late additions from those who are in bowls, those who are also in the CFP Invitational, and as well. So you'll also be able to get that, but you'll have a head start on that. That's where you got to focus on. That's why you want to get those coaches in. You want to make sure you get the right coaches, but you want to get them in so that you can already get a head start there. And then here's what I'll say to this thing. For me, my three characteristics, the things I'm looking for in the next coordinators, because like you said, there's a million position coaches out there, but whoever they bring in, coach, position coaches or coordinator, I need to see three things. And they're very simple. You're going to be like, Michael, those are things you want to see in everybody. But no. I don't just need to see them. I need to like feel them. When I hear this coach talk, I need to feel them. Number one, you have to be the best dadgum recruiter I've ever seen in my lifetime. We need recruiters. We need recruiters. And I don't care if being an elite recruiter means you know how to get the bag in the player's hand. I don't care. Just get it in their hands and get those players. We need elite recruiters. Number two, we need developers. One of the things we've said for a while on this show is that we credit the staff with developing a lot of those transfer portal players. Okay. Well, what we're finding is that maybe a lot of them didn't need as much development. They were just already really good, right?
They just needed to touch the ball.
They just needed to touch the ball, put them in the right position, and they would go. I think Johnny Wilson is probably one of those ones you could give Ron Dugan's kind of credit for, because he was really nothing until he got to Florida State. But like Jared Verse and Braden Fisk, and
they were already good.
They were already good. Yep. So we need developers. And then number three, and you're going to be like, Michael, that's dumb. Every coach wants to win. No, no, no. I need coaches who don't like losing. And when I say don't like losing, I mean like they're willing to punch your grandma. To win a game.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I know you think I'm joking. I am dead serious. Like when I watch Dan Lanning, who literally told his team before the game, like, is this not what you expect? Whatever that gladiator quote was. He said,
Are you not entertained?
He said, in the fourth quarter, we're going to turn around and you're going to see the scoreboard and we're going to yell, are you not? And literally in the fourth quarter, they're yelling, are you not entertained? Like, I was fired up for that. I mean, you hear,
he Kirby. Actually, fun thing on that, he actually called, it's funny. I got to tell you, go ahead. Because I love Dan Lanning. You guys have probably heard me gush over him before. I want a Kirby Smart type of coach. I want a Dan Lanning coach that'll rip your head off and poo down your throat because he's so angry. But actually, he told his players before that game that they were going to make their fans leave early. And so what they did was he called a timeout in the fourth quarter and told them to look around because I think it was Michigan, right?
Yep.
The Michigan fans were headed for the door. So he called. He said, look, did I not tell you this was going to happen? Are you not entertained? I was like, that's badass.
That's a coach I want. I want a coach who's willing to make a call. Like, I remember Bobby Bowden used to shoot his shot, and he would say things. You're like, okay, Bobby, easy, calm down. And then Bobby be like, I told you guys, dadgummit, I told you guys. Right? That's the kind of coach I want. I want a coach who's willing to walk up to an old lady crossing the street and move her out of the way just to win a game. Like, that's what I want. Like, it's not enough to just like winning. I need you to like. You just do not like losing more than you like winning, right?
Yeah.
That's the kind of coach I want. I think those are the three biggest characteristics that whether it's in his coaching tree or outside of his coaching tree, he needs to find those three things.
Yeah, and I think that goes for the recruiting trail too. I mean, there's some guys that just won't take no for an answer.
Correct.
And so that's what I like too. So let's talk about a couple of these names at coordinators that we're hearing, we're seeing, we're looking at, maybe some guys that we like. We'll start on the offensive side of the ball here. And I will say with the OC, it's going to be a little bit more complicated with an OC because you aren't really sure what position coaches, first off, that will be retained. You're not really sure what position coaches you're going to need. Like your OC, obviously you guys know what I'm getting at, but they might come in and be an OC wide receiver coach or an OC quarterback coach. So you don't really know who you're going to need yet. So that's why we're just going to focus on the coordinators for right now. And then we'll get into the position coaches as these things flesh themselves out. But you know, we'll see how it goes. So the first one that I want to talk about here is one that I feel like is very likely to be one of the top candidates for that offensive coordinator position. It's a guy I really like. It's a guy I would love to have. You guys have heard me talk about this guy before, and that is Brennan Marion.
Yeah, that's your boy.
This is my guy. Like, this is who I personally would love to have here. He did play the connection. The last episode, I said I thought he had a connection to Mike Norvell. Well, I went and did some research on him. He did play wide receiver at Tulsa, where Mike Norvell was one of his coaches at the time. He actually said in an interview that I watched where he said Mike Norvell is pretty much the reason he has a college degree. Like, he said that Mike Norvell, he talks a lot about like some of the biggest influences in his life. Gus Malzahn was one of them, but Mike Norvell was the number two influence that he talked about. He said this guy was one who would knock on your door at 5 o'clock in the morning to make sure your butt was in class. He loves the way he coaches. So there's a lot of respect for Mike Norvell from Brennan Marion, too. Norvell also gave him a job at Arizona State.
Yeah.
And so he gave him a chance to really be one of the first FBS coaches or one of his coaching jobs. Now, it was a very low-level job, but still, he gave him an opportunity. And I'm sure he's appreciative of that. He's also very gettable. being the offensive coordinator at UNLV. The money obviously would be a big difference. You'd be going from G5 to P4. I think that's big too. The reason I like Marion here is he is the creator of the hottest offense, if you want to say it right now, in football. You're seeing a lot of concepts, not only from him, this go-go offense. You're seeing a lot of concepts be taken into the NFL now. Right. You're seeing with Cliff Kingsbury. You're seeing a lot of the other colleges start to take concepts off this. And basically, in a nutshell, and if he gets hired, we'll do a deep dive into the go-go offense. But basically what it is it's based on a triple option with deep passing concepts. And I like how he said, like, we want to run the ball, but we don't want to give up the fun pass plays. And I'm like, I like fun pass plays. Every player has to do their job. It makes it simple for the offensive line. And I do want to touch on one thing, because there's been a really big misnomer that I've seen amongst a lot of our fans when this name gets brought up, is that, oh, well, you got to have a mobile quarterback or else this offense it's not going to work. He says that is not even remotely the case. They do not have to be mobile. Just the threat of the run. I mean, obviously it helps if you have George Travis back there, but it helps. But you really just need a quarterback that understands the system and can distribute the ball. Mobility helps, but is not necessary. It's a very up-tempo offense. He says he likes to run around 90 plays per game, says they've run around 65 to 70 at UNLV the last 2 years, and said, like, that's just not good enough. We got to speed it up. We got to get faster. A lot of similar concepts to Mike Norvell's offense. And he's got a good coaching pedigree. He's played for Gus Malzahn, and I know Gus Malzahn, I get it, but, like, he's actually a pretty good offensive coach. He's coached under Todd Graham, Steve Sarkisian at Texas. He actually is a quarterback coach at UNLV, but he's a wide receiver coach by nature. That's where he played in college. And, oh, by the way, when he was a wide receiver coach at Pitt, he happened to develop this guy named Jordan Addison, who is a Blitkenhoff winner. So, man, he had a lot of big recruiting wins there at Texas when he was with Sarkisian. Dante I really think he's 37 years old, so he's super young. I think this is a guy, man. I think he's going to be high on the list because of the connections to Mike Norvell to start with, and a similar concept. So, man, I really like Brendan Marion as an offensive coordinator choice here. I'm not saying it's going to happen, because he may get offered a head coaching job. He's climbed the ranks really fast, but I think it outside of going for a head coaching spot, I think he's got to be interested.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, yes, you're right. He developed Jordan Addison at Pitt. He was also a really good recruiter. He recruited Jonte Cook, who was a five-star wide receiver at Texas, who's, you know, tearing it up now. He would be my number one choice. Absolutely. I would love Brendan Manning. But let me just give you a wild card, okay? Can I just give you a wild card here? And everybody's going to laugh. You know who I'm going to talk about right here. Dan Mullins. Okay.
It would be the most unlikely choice, but I don't think it's the most
unlikely choice.
I don't think it's that crazy now. Here's
why. Let me just make a quick case for Dan Mullins. Okay. Now, yes, he's been out of the coaching game for some time. He got fired at Florida. He hates recruiting. So it does not accomplish one of my main criteria. But man, if you could get him to like decently enjoy recruiting, I mean, just think about this. The dude produced one of the best offenses that broke our hearts every other year, almost every year for a long time, right? When he was at Florida and he had Tim Tebow, he had Alex Smith at Utah. He freaking had Dak Prescott at Mississippi State. Remember that one time they were ranked number one above Florida State and we were all pissed off because that should not ever happen. Like, the dude can run an offense. The man, when he was the head coach at Florida and that offense was still chumming. He just had a terrible defense and he didn't like recruiting. So I'm just saying that if Mike wanted to go get somebody who he was going to turn the keys over and he could say, hey, part of this thing is you got to recruit, bro. And he could get recruiting. I'm just saying, I'm just putting it out there. Dan Mullins, it's wild. Yeah.
No, I think Dan Mullins is actually kind of a decent name to mention because obviously he's just an analyst at ESPN right now. Right. So I think if he's itching to get back into the thing, you know, into coaching. Now, a lot of people said, well, he could go be a head coach somewhere. I'm sure. But maybe he could do this because he doesn't want to recruit a lot. I mean, you could surround him with an offensive staff full of recruiters. And he is a very, very good play caller. So I definitely think that he could be an option there. Man, wouldn't that be ironic if you got
Dan Mullen? Wouldn't that be crazy?
That would be crazy. But he is a very good play caller. So like you said, I think if it was truly where you wanted an offensive coordinator to run the show and you kind of take your hands off the keys, I think Dan Mullen would actually be a pretty good choice.
Yeah.
Not the likely choice, but I think it's very possible. And to talk about a couple other guys here, some that I think actually have a pretty good chance of maybe being in the fold here. You know, Michael, I know you love the Cignetti guy from Indiana.
Oh, gosh. If what we could hire him today.
Right. Like, we're not going to change head coaches, but what if you could go gut his staff? And so that's why I think two names to watch here are going to be Mike Shanahan, no relation to the NFL guys.
Right.
The co-OC and wide receivers coach at Indiana currently. He's making $800,000 a year there. We know Alex Atkins was just making $1.3 million. So I know they're in the Big Ten. Maybe they could pony up some more money. But you know that you can pay more than he's making.
Yep.
You're in a better state at a bigger program. You know, how long is Indiana's success going to be even sustained? Is that a real thing? And then I also think another name to watch here, and really, truthfully, if you get one, I'd like to get them as a package deal, is Tino Cinceri. The quarterback coach and co-OC, the other half of the co at Indiana. Now, he's only currently, from what I found, being paid $540,000. So that would be a massive upgrade. Now, that name probably sounds familiar to some of you guys because he was here in, I think, 2016-17 under Jimbo.
That's right.
So, you know, I don't know if they want to if they want to take the you know, the X back, but he wasn't part of the problem here from what I understand. But I think he is a very bright offensive mind. He's an up-and-comer. He's a young guy. You know, he's already familiar with the way things work at Florida State. He's already recruited this area from this school. I think that's a good option there, too. Shanahan, the tie there is he actually played for Norvell while he was a coach at Pitt.
Yep.
So there is a connection there. He was also the OC at James Madison before getting to Indiana.
Right.
They had a good offense there, too, averaging over 30 points a game the 2 years there in FBS, because we know they transitioned from FCS. So those are two names that I think you should keep on the radar right there.
Yep.
Some other ones here, I don't know if you have any too. One I want to address real quick that I just don't think this is realistic is Brian Hartline at Ohio State there. I know everybody wants him because the man is an elite recruiter. I mean, obviously he went and snatched Jeremiah Smith out of Florida, out of your backyard. You would love to have him. He is the co-OC there. I've heard some mixed reviews about whether they liked him or not while he was at, you know, the coordinator there at Ohio State. That's why they brought in Chip Kelly to be the co-OC to kind of take over the play calling there. I just don't know if this is realistic because, one, I don't think Ohio State's a school you can really get in a bidding war with if they want to keep him that bad. And with the recruiting that he's done, you're not going to get him as just a wide receivers coach. So you're going to have to make him coordinator. And, you know, I don't have his salary on hand, but, man, I'm sure if you get into a bidding war with Ohio State, you might not win that one. So I think it would be it's fun to talk about. It would be great from a recruiting perspective. I just don't think that's the answer, but we'll see.
Right. Yeah. So right now, as a co-offensive coordinator and wide receiver coach, he's making $1.6 million a year. Yeah.
Again, that's a tough one.
That's a tough one. Now let me just make a small case for Brian Hartline, why you want to do this. Because one, whatever feedback that you've heard about Brian Hartline, the thing is, the reason why they actually went and got Chip Kelly was because Ryan Day was calling the plays, not Brian Hartline. Maybe he called a couple plays here or there, kind of like how Mike and Kenny Dillingham would switch off from time to time. Maybe he did that and they didn't like it. I don't know. I don't know when he was calling the plays and when he wasn't. All I know is that Ryan Day was calling a lot of the plays. That was a big consternation among Buckeye fans. They went and got Chip Kelly, okay? Brian Hartline, the boy can recruit. I don't know what he's doing, but he can recruit. I mean, he's had Marvin Harrison Jr. He's got Jeremiah Smith. I mean, you just keep going down the line. The man can produce. And so giving him full controls of an offense, paying him $1.8, almost $2 million to be an offensive coordinator, and letting him live in the state of Florida, the hotbed of recruiting. I mean, to me, again, this is like Brandon Manning. I mean, it's like a no-brainer. If you can get one of these two, that's what I'm saying. That's why, like, Brian Hartline is like my, like, man, if I had to really, really
put money. He's 1B.
Oh, he is 1B because the man, he fits all. He doesn't like losing. He's a developer, and he's a recruiter, okay? So that's my little plug for Hartline.
Yeah, I think you want him. I just don't know that you can get him. That's the only thing. But, you know, the thing is, like, man, Ryan Day's got to start winning stuff or they might move on from him, too.
Exactly.
So, you know, that he might see that writing on the wall, too. Just a couple of other quick names to go through here. We'll pick up the pace a little bit. We'll go with that hurry-up offense some. Kevin Johns, the OU interim OC. This is a guy that worked with Norvell at Memphis. He was Duke's offensive coordinator in 2022. I know that Oklahoma's offense has looked better since he's taken control of the offense there. But I also look at this like, you know, he was with Mike Norvell at Memphis. He didn't bring him to Florida State. So I don't know that that's a real. It's just some of these are names that we want. Some of these are names that we're hearing mentioned. So we're just kind of touching on all of them. Washington State OC Ben Arbuckle, I think, is another name to keep an eye on here. That, you know, they've had great offenses with Cam Ward. They don't have Cam Ward. You see he's playing great at Miami right now. Their offense is still great. And so I think, you know, you look at what they've done there on offense at Washington State. That's the one thing they've always been known for is their offense. I think that's a name to keep an eye on there. Tulane OC Joe Faulkner is another name to keep an eye on. Obviously, Tulane has been one of the best G5 programs for the last few years. They have a good offense. Texas State offensive coordinator is another one that I think you mentioned to me that could be a good one there.
Yep.
So I don't know if you have any more names, but that's pretty much where I'm at with the offensive coordinators.
No, I think that's it. Oh, I lied. Steve Adazio, I've heard about him as a great potential offensive coordinator, but more so probably on the offensive line coach.
If you want him.
I mean, he is an incredible offensive line coach. So I've heard that for him. Yeah, that's about it. That's all I have for offensive line as well, too.
Yeah, if you could get Adazio as your offensive line coach, former head coach, you know, I would take that. I think one name to watch, too, at offensive line, I know we're not getting into position coaches, is if Arkansas moves on from Sam Pittman after this year,
He
was Georgia's offensive line coach when Georgia had some road graders. So I would love to get Sam Pittman. I don't know what you got to pay Iowa's offensive line coach, but pay it. Go get that guy because that would be awesome. So let's switch over to the defensive side of the ball and talk about some names that we're hearing here. The first one on the list for me, not necessarily in the order that I want them, but the first name that I've heard a lot mentioned is Tyler Santucci, who is the defensive coordinator at Georgia Tech. The reason I like this guy, he comes from the Mike Elko tree. And you know Mike Elko is a heck of a defensive coordinator there. Really turned around Duke's defense there. He was with him at A&M. He was with him at Duke. He may not have been the play caller there, but you did see what he did with Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's defense was abysmal last year. Oof. And he really flipped them around. He's a young guy. I looked it up. He's only making $600,000. Only making $600,000. I wish I was only making $600,000 a year.
So nice.
Right? Exactly. I wouldn't be driving an 85 Camry, but but that's one I think that you could probably make a move on there. The only difference in the two is with Brent Key as head coach, that Georgia Tech team is kind of up and coming. So you're going to have to talk him out of a program that's on the rise. We'll see. I mean, we've heard that Georgia Tech has financial problems. You know, that's why they kind of promoted Brent Key. So maybe you could just straight up outbid them. I'll throw another name out there, then I'll kick it to you for someone here. Chris Hampton, Oregon co-DC is one that I've heard mentioned. He's the former Tulane DC, and they had a good defense there at Tulane. So he does have experience as the DC, because, you know, if he's a co-DC at Oregon with Dan Lanning, he's probably not calling the defense. But that is a guy that I like because he is originally from the Southeast, so he kind of has the ties down in this area. You know, I don't know that I would want a recruiter coming all the way from Oregon, but he has ties down to this area. And I think you can vet him through Dan Lanning because Mike Norvell and Dan Lanning have a lot of respect for each other. So you can call Dan Lanning and say, hey, is this worth pursuing or no? And he's going to probably give you the real answer.
So
that's another name that I've heard as well.
Yeah, I'll give you two names that I mean, there's a bunch of names we could talk about, but the two names that really, one is like, okay, yeah, it makes sense. And you just mentioned him. And the other one is, I'll give you three names. Number one is Chris Hampton. Obviously, I think this is like, this should be candidate number one. I mean, he's a Dan Lanning disciple, Mike Norvell disciple. Listen, you've seen Dan Lanning defense. You saw him at Georgia. You've seen what they're doing at Oregon. Remember, Oregon has never been known for his defense. And look what they're doing there. They're walking in people's houses, telling people the look, we're making people leave right now. Like, and so I like the fact that, yes, he's probably calling part of the defense. I'm going to assume he's calling part of it, or maybe he was kind of like Alex Atkins. You know, he's part of the game planning of the defense.
Right.
But then, you know, somebody else is calling the defense on game day. I think this would be a great hire. He's proven it. He's a great recruiter. I mean, gosh, they've been getting players left and right to come out to Eugene from everywhere.
Yeah. And he's been a big part of that.
Yep. He's been a big part of that. So I think he's probably plan A. Now, a couple of like maybe dark horse candidates. Number one, I think, is Jim Leonhard. I think that's how you say his name.
Leonard.
Let's go with Leonard. Okay, Jim Leonard.
Whatever, Jim.
Right. So remember Jim, he used to be the defensive coordinator at Wisconsin. They thought he was a shoe-in. He didn't get it, you know, all that whole deal. He was an incredible defensive coordinator, has always had the pedigree for that. you know, obviously he was at Wisconsin, so you could argue, well, maybe he doesn't have the recruiter thing in him. I don't know. Give him the opportunity to be in a hotbed and let's see what he can do. But yeah, he was solid. Wisconsin had consistently, you know, top 20 defense every single year under him. So yeah, that's it.
There was a lot of people, I think, who were really disappointed when we didn't get him
exactly
the first time, because first I think time they wanted him over Adam Fuller. And I will absolutely say on him, from what I read on him, because I did look at him a little bit too, they said it's going to have to be a really good situation to get him out of the NFL, but he is right only on a one-year contract with the Broncos. So that's, I do right think that is a real possibility.
Real possibility.
You know, Mike Norvell, I don't know who he was talking about, but he did say there was interest from the NFL. So
he
maybe
did say that. He did yep say that. So that's why I'm putting it out. And then the other name is Will Muschamp, which is so funny that we're talking yeah about two Gators, former Gators coming to work at Florida State. But you mean Will Muschamp, when he was a defensive coordinator, I mean, he coordinated some elite of the best elite yeah defenses. He is actually a really good recruiter. You know, his problem at Florida as a head coach, he just couldn't get an offense going. I yep mean, that was his big deal. Like, he just couldn't get an offense. And yeah, so he's an analyst for Georgia. His I think you told me his kid plays there, I believe.
Yeah, his kid used to play there. I didn't even bring this up. His kid actually, he was like a walk-on at Georgia. Actually got to play quarterback against us in the Orange Bowl because it was so ugly. But
That's right.
I actually did check the UGA roster, and he is graduated. No, he is okay no longer there. Okay.
So yeah, so he doesn't have anything timed out now. Maybe he enjoys the analyst life. It's not as stressful. It's not as all the hours or everything. But I would imagine he's itching to get back into the seat, right? Yeah. And so I think that's your other dark horse candidate there. So I think those three. I think you got a good pool. I've heard Scott Simmons from SMU is also a consideration. Also Zach Arnett, who was the Mississippi State coach that got fired. He's now an analyst at Ole Miss. I've heard that name tossed around as well too. And then the other one that I think is quite hilarious is Robert Livingston from Colorado, where they literally play no defense whatsoever. Why are yeah we considering this?
Yeah, to me, I think Will Muschamp would be my personal number one, just because ooh, like, there, go out on YouTube and type in, like, I think I found it last night, Will Muschamp whiteboard, and like, he's explaining something when he was at Texas, and he's like, can you just, God, he like just punches the whiteboard, and I'm like, that's who I want as my defensive coordinator. Yeah. There's also another clip of him and Saban at LSU, and they're both on the sideline just yelling it, throwing air punches and all stuff. And I'm like, that's the attitude I want out of yes my defensive coordinator, where he might blow a blood vessel on his head because he's so mad. That's what I want. And
reminds me of Mickey Andrews. Yeah,
exactly. And so like, again, like you said, man, he always had great defenses at Florida. Yeah. He was elite at Texas.
Yeah.
South Carolina, nobody's ever won there. So, right, you know, that it is what it is there. But he's always been it's like Charlie Strong, you know, great yep defensive coordinator, not a great head coach. He is an analyst there at Georgia. I did read that he stepped back from the DC position because he wanted to spend more time with his family.
Yeah.
He did go to UGA. He's very close with Kirby Smart. So I think he'd be a hard pull.
Yeah.
But if he wanted to get back in the saddle, I mean, he's got a lot of money. So I don't yeah think it's a money issue. But I mean, he's only an analyst. So I think that would be someone to really look at there. I definitely agree with the other ones that you said. Scott Simons, the SMU DC, coached under Norvell at Memphis. SMU has a really good defense. He's done a great job there. I think that's a name to really watch. Might be a hard pull. Again, SMU is an up-and-coming program.
They're right now number one in the ACC.
Right, exactly. So that might be a hard one to convince there. Another one that I've kind of heard mentioned too is it's a hard name to say, Greg Gasparotto, Tulane's DC. We already talked about their OC. He had a top 10 defense at Troy. They're currently top 20 in defense at Tulane. That's probably further down the list, but a name worth looking there. Another one that I want to put on the radar here is Jonathan Patke, the defensive coordinator at Duke. We know how good that Duke defense yeah is with not a whole lot of talent.
That's
and
right
so I also think Duke is one of those schools where if you get into a bidding war, that's something you can win.
Yep.
You have to look at how high you can go in that position,
exactly
right?
Yep.
You're going to be way better off being at a place like Florida State versus Duke.
Correct.
I know we just lost to Duke. I get that.
Right.
But, you know, again, so Duke's DC is one to look at there too. So, yeah, a lot of names being thrown around
Let me give you one more just because I know it's out there. We talked about this in the pre-show, was Brad White from Kentucky, the defensive coordinator there.
Yeah.
He's a Mark Stoops disciple. The only thing I would say about Brad White is there's speculation right now amongst the Kentucky fans and the Kentucky program that Mark Stoops might not be back next season, you know, because he's had a terrible couple years and he might be tired. And he also has gone through the Jimbo stuff of going through a divorce. And some of that he lost his mom this year. So a lot of that has affected him this year. So Brad White is probably one of the top candidates for Kentucky if Mark Stoops were to step down as that coach. So again, there is connection between Brad White and Mike Norvell, but I put that name way down the list.
Yeah. Hey, Mark Stoops, what you doing? You want to retire down in Florida? I mean, right? He's pretty good down here. So yeah, we just wanted to cover some names that we've heard, some names that we're interested, some of the ones that we like. Obviously this is going to be an ongoing process. Nobody really knows, but that's kind of what we're hearing so far. If anything new pops up, we'll definitely keep you guys informed there from what we're getting. So Michael, the one more thing I want to touch on before we end this show is, man, you know, it is like, I know it's getting a little bit cold, man, but the insects are still out. And, you know, I saw some bees flying around this weekend, and somebody we know got stung this weekend for the second time in a row. And it was funny to see Georgia Tech actually did take a knee to end this game, unlike another program that we know doesn't know how, it's not in the playbook. So we just had to pick on them a little bit. Look, everybody's like, oh, how are you going to dunk on Miami when you're 1-9? I'm like,
Miami,
you must be new to this rivalry.
Exactly.
We are always taking shots. And then, boys, again, man, it's like you flirted with all these losses with Cal, with Louisville, you know, all these games where the refs bailed you out. It finally came back to bite you. And that's why they fell a pretty good bit, man. They fell, I think it was like number 11 or something like that. They fell way down because, man, I think it's just you couldn't do it when they were undefeated.
Correct.
But they were really waiting for that reason to drop them. And you know, they got stung this weekend. So
listen,
appreciate you, Tyler Santucci.
Thank you. Florida State could literally lose for the next 20 seasons, and it will still be Miami. We will still make fun of Miami when they lose. Don't care. Always. And listen, you know what? I actually, Jesse, I think you're wrong. Miami did take a knee. Cam Ward took a knee as he was fumbling the ball, which Georgia Tech recovered, and then they won the game. So thank you, Cam Ward, for taking a knee. You showed your coach how to do that.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, we lost, but it's pretty evident that that team is probably a 3-4 loss team without Cam Ward. Without the ACC refs, they're a 3-loss team. But man, without Cam Ward, that's a 4-loss team. Georgia weekend too. Like,
yeah, it was a wild weekend.
It's a crazy season, man. No one's really standing out.
Isn't it crazy that a down year for Georgia is 2 losses and Alabama 2? Like, this is wild.
I know. But see, that's why you need recruiting. That's why you need an elite staff, because that's where you want to be, where you're pissed off because you're 7-2.
That's right.
I pray for 7-2 right now. But that's going to be it, guys. That's the show. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Like I said, we had a quick hitter on the last one. We wanted to expand on that this one. So hopefully you guys enjoyed it. If you did enjoy the show, make sure you hit like and subscribe. Last time I checked, we just hit 1,700 subscribers. So we appreciate everybody with us throughout this bad season. We appreciate every one of you. You guys are the ones that make it happen. So hit a like and subscribe, rate and review on the podcast. Tell a friend. We've had some people tell us that they have been telling some friends. And so we really, really, really greatly appreciate that, because we love what we do. You got to love what you do when you're talking about a 1-9 team, Michael.
Right.
Make sure you check out Alumni Hall. Use code SPEAR to get 10% off to get you some great FSU gear. So we appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks for watching. And as always, go Noles.